Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the webinar on Recent Changes and Evolving Structures for Foreign Investment in Indian Insurance Sector. This event is being organized by Nishit Desai Associates. The speakers are Mr. Nischal Joshipura, Partner, M&A and Private Equity, Nishit Desai Associates, Ms. Simone Reyes, Co-Head, M&A and PE, Nishit Desai Associates, and Mr. Abhinav Harlalka, Member, Banking and Financial Services, Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's discussion. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Also, you can download our mobile applet, Nishit Mobile, which is available on the App Store for iOS device, Play Store for Android, and BlackBerry World to access the current updates and videos. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Nischal Joshipura. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Very warm welcome to all the participants joining this webinar. Today we are going to discuss the recent changes with respect to foreign investment in Indian insurance sector, the impact of these changes on the current structures and the joint venture agreements entered into by foreign investors with the Indian partners, and which are the new structures that could be explored so that those structures are compliant with the recently introduced foreign investment norms. Before we start discussing the changes with respect to the insurance sector, let me quickly take you through the history of liberalization of insurance sector in India. So the first insurance company in India was set up in 1818 by British. The name of the company was Oriental Insurance. The next major milestone in the Indian insurance sector was in 1956 when 245 life insurance companies were nationalized by the central government and brought under the fold of Life Insurance Corporation of India. Similar nationalization happened in 1973 when about 107 general insurance companies were brought under the fold of General Insurance Corporation and its four subsidiaries. The next major milestone was in 1993 when Malhotra Committee was formed to strengthen the regulatory system for the insurance sector. Two of the major recommendations of Malhotra Committee were to privatize the insurance sector and to set up an insurance regulator for the sector. In 1999, the recommendations were implemented where Insurance Regulatory Development Authority or IRDA was set up for regulating the insurance companies and the insurance intermediaries. In 2000-2001, the foreign investment limit for insurance sector was allowed up to 26%. The next major change happened in 2008 when Insurance Laws Amendment Bill was introduced for hiking the foreign investment limit in Indian insurance sector from 26% to 49%. But unfortunately, the standing committee at that time did not clear the insurance amendment bill. Post the Modi government taking over in May 2014, Insurance Amendment Bill 2014 was introduced and tabled in Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha, which was also referred to the standing committee. This bill was passed in March 2015 in Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha, and recently also received the assent of the President of India. In the meantime, the government, to be on a safe side, also brought in ordinance on December 26, 2014, hiking the insurance limit from 26% to 49%, just to ensure that in case the bill doesn't get passed in Rajya Sabha, because the current government does not have majority in Rajya Sabha, the ordinance route would still work for the time being. So the law as it stands today, foreign investment is permitted up to 49% in insurance sector, subject to satisfaction of certain conditions. My first question now goes to Abhinav. Abhinav, can you throw light on what are the changes which have been recently introduced with respect to the insurance sector?
So I'll restrict my answer here to those changes which would affect foreign investment into the insurance sector. The first and the most important change, as you mentioned, was increasing the foreign investment limit to 49%. Till recently, the insurance limit was 26% and it was under the automatic route. However, now they've amended that to state that the insurance limit, the foreign investment limit would be up to 49%. However, up till 26% would be under the automatic route, so the position there remains as it was. And from 26 to 49, you would need the approval of the FIPB. So they've now made it under the government or the approval route beyond 26%. In this limit of 49% or 26%, all foreign investments, including NRI investments, FPI investments, would all be subsumed and they would be counted towards the 49%. One interesting change that they brought in now is to ensure that the insurance company at all times is Indian-owned or controlled. This restriction was not there in the earlier law, and this is a new introduction that they have made, saying that the control and ownership of the Indian insurance companies must be in the hands of Indian residents at all times. A necessary change because of this, to some extent, was the omission of the clause in the Insurance Act, which was Section 6AA, which says that, you know, the promoter shareholding should not increase 26, should not be beyond 26% at any time. And the promoters were given a period of 10 years from the commencement of their own insurance businesses to bring it down. The standing committee and the select committee both noted that this was important if you had to bring in the 49%, because of the fact that if you had 49% of foreign investment, the other 51% would have to act as a consolidated group for control to be in India, which in case of a dispersed shareholding could have been difficult. So they've removed that as a result of the 49% FDI investment. The other important change that has been made is expanding the scope of the insurance sector where the investment caps apply. Earlier, they had identified four main intermediaries or companies, four main heads under which insurance would fall, which would be your insurance company, your insurance brokers, your loss and survey assessors, and the third party administrators. However, now when they've amended that, they've included a fifth clause, which is more of a residual clause, where they said all other intermediaries appointed under the IRDA regulation. What this does is that if there was any intermediary which was not captured earlier, would now be captured. And the fourth important change that they brought about is permitting foreign companies to conduct reinsurance business in India through a branch office. They brought in certain conditions which have to be met. For example, the asset of the net assets of the parent company of the holdco at the offshore level must be at least 5,000 crores. But those are more specific things, and we are still awaiting guidelines on this. So these, in a sense, are the four main changes that have been brought in by the recent changes to the insurance sector.
Okay, thanks, Abhinav. Simon, my next question to you is: it has always been difficult for foreign investors to structure their investments in Indian insurance sector, especially when 26% has not been sufficient for them to take exposure on Indian insurance sector. My question to you is, how have these foreign investors been structuring their investments till date in the insurance companies or insurance intermediaries?
Sure. So you're right. You know, there have been various modes of in which foreign investors have actually invested into insurance companies. The first, of course, is the direct investment route, where up to 26 was allowed without any government approval, so directly you could invest 26% into the share capital of the company. Now, you must note that the 26% was only limited to equity shares, because as per the IRDA, the only share capital that could be issued was equity shares. So 26% direct investment through a plain and simple equity shares was always could be issued. Now, along with the 26% direct investment route, we've seen, you know, various companies having affirmative rights and you know, protection, minority protection, and other rights to control how their investment, to control their investment and consequential business decisions in the company. The second route that was, you know, looked at was the holding company route that was also looked at. Now, what this basically entailed was that the foreign investment would be at the holding company level, and that holding company would then invest into the insurance company. Why this was done was because, unlike you know, any other company making investments into an Indian company, where the FDI policy governs how downstream investments really work and what is the percentage of what owned and controlled would mean and how downstream investment into an Indian company would then be calculated, the IRDA had specific modes and methods for calculating the indirect foreign investment into insurance companies. In essence, this had three limbs. One, the first was, you know, to see whether the foreign company, that is the foreign investor, had any investment in the insurance company, whether by itself or through its subsidiaries. The second limb was to see, was to look at the other foreign shareholding in the insurance company itself. And third, which dealt with the indirect foreign investment, looked at a proportionate method of calculation. But the proportionate method was only looked at if there was commonality of shareholding between the shareholders that were investing in the promoter holdco, which is the holding company, and directly in investment in the insurance company. Now, what investors did was, did not invest into the directly into the insurance company and only invested in the holding company, which basically gave them the flexibility to have a larger percentage in the holding company, thereby qualifying or fulfilling the criteria laid down by the IRDA. Again, this could have also been accompanied with rights, formative rights, controlling rights, and things like that. The third structure that was looked at was for entities that didn't necessarily need equity shareholding, but were okay to get just the economic benefits out of the insurance company. In which case, instruments like non-convertible debentures were also used. Now, you must note that under the IRDA and the foreign investment rules, all that was looked at was the foreign investment in equity shares to calculate, the total percentage of foreign investment in the insurance company, thereby permitting other routes such as the NCD route, the non-convertible debt route, or the RPS route, the redeemable preference share route, for investors to actually invest, whether at the holding company with an RPS or a non-convertible debenture also at the holding company or at the insurance company potentially. So these were the three real routes that were actually looked at before. Of course, as Abhinav pointed out, and maybe we'll discuss later, the new rules and the new laws pose a change in how we can now look at these
Okay, thanks, Simon. So I think because of these changes, there have been number of issues which have come up on structures and the existing arrangements. Maybe my first question will be to you, Abhinav. I think there is some change with respect to the type of instruments which can be used by an insurance company or insurance intermediary compared to what it was earlier. What is that change?
So what the law earlier said was that an insurance Indian insurance company could only have equity share capital in its capital. Okay. Now, they've changed that in the Act itself to state equity share capital or any other form of capital which may be prescribed by the authority. Authority being, of course, the IRDA. However, the central government, which came out with the notifications to give effect to the changes that were brought in by the ordinance, now which would be the Act, did not make room for that particular class of instrument, any other class of instrument, say, for example, a preference. So as it stands today, equity shares are the only mode of investment through which you can invest in an insurance company, Indian insurance company. However, let's see, we may see the IRDAI coming out soon with changes to that, allowing for preference shares. However, one thing we must always bear in mind is the fact that they have clearly said that the voting rights would always be limited only to equity shares.
Right.
So no matter what sort of instruments come in, the voting rights will have to be restricted only to equity share.
Okay, understood. So I think that may not be too much of a problem because since under the new Companies Act also,
right.
Specifically they mentioned that preference shares cannot have voting rights. They can have voting rights only in limited situations. So that may not be too much of an issue as far as conflict of laws is concerned. But I think the more interesting issue, Simon, which a lot of insurance companies and foreign investors are grappling with right now with respect to the recent amendment, is on the introduction of the concept of control, which means that the Indian insurance company has to be owned and controlled by Indian residents. What impact do you see of this definition of control on the current structures or the new structures?
Yeah, so we're not new to this problem of the word control. We've seen, I think, the largest debate on what constitutes control, thrashed out by various regulators, whether it was the Aviation Ministry, the FIPB, the Competition Commission of India, the SEBI. We had all regulators' views of what could constitute control, although there is no finality. Despite all of this, there's no finality of what could constitute control for various legislations. But for the first time, we have all of these legislations having a similar concept. And I say similar because the definition under the Competition Act is a little different from the definition in perhaps the Takeover Code, the FDA policy, and the Companies Act. But all of them have broadly similar principles on defining what control really is. Again, there are no objective tests to define what control is because of the way the definition is actually worded. It says, first and foremost, it's an inclusive definition. It uses the word includes the right to appoint a majority of directors on the board. The second limb is it includes the right to have management decisions, whether to control management decisions, whether it's through a shareholder's agreement or otherwise, which again leads to the confusion as to what really could constitute control. Now, it's always been discussed as to, and the biggest problem for investors coming into a company, and also if you look at the standing committee reports that were drafted, that discussed this entire concept as to whether affirmative rights today constitute control for the purposes of the FDI policy. Now, the Competition Commission of India, I think, is the only regulator that has taken a clear stand, whether rightly or wrongly, has actually stated that any affirmative rights for the purposes of the competition law would in fact include control. However, in a breathtaking judgment, SEBI said that although we have similar definitions, just because control today is viewed by one regulator, certain rights is viewed by one regulator as having as control, does not mean that other regulators would have to follow suit. Therefore, giving purposeful interpretation to the word control. Now, as I discussed before, all structures under the previous regime, which had 26%, included affirmative rights and things like that. But I think going forward, given the focus that the control and management has to be with Indian residents, we will have to see a change in how rights are actually granted. We can't have just a plethora of affirmative rights wherein the entire business decision is now being moved to foreign investors. Affirmative rights as a concept may not strictly mean that you have control, but it'll have to be looked at squarely given the business decisions of the company. So we'll have to be very cognizant of what affirmative rights can be given and what can't be. Minority protection rights, seemingly should be possible, but anything beyond minority protection rights, anything that involves business decision making, would in fact have a potential problem.
So maybe, Simon, I think let's take three or four situations and what would be the impact of the new foreign investment norms on those situations. Let's say there is a foreign investor which has no interest in the Indian company or no prior shareholding in the Indian company and wants to acquire up to 26%. What would your recommendation be on what type of rights the foreign investor can have?
Well, if you have no foreign shareholding in the company and you just want to straight away acquire 26% with no requirement to go to FIPB. Since the element of control today is taints the entire, whether 26% or 49%, you will have to still, even though you don't really need to go to a specific regulator for approval, you will have to ensure that the rights that you have do not go beyond what is actually permitted. So to that extent, there is a slight restriction from what was originally permitted under the previous law. Previous law, you know, permitted 26% with all rights. Now we have 26% with limited rights, permissible under the current framework.
And I think it would also be interesting because one is FIPB, which has a definition of control, and how IRDA also interprets the definition
Absolutely.
Of control would be interesting because Absolutely. In the past, we have always seen that IRDA is one of the most conservative regulators. In fact, IRDA at times has also not been comfortable with allowing the investors to come through the most favored jurisdictions for investments into India like Mauritius, where, you know, as we all know, almost 45% of foreign investment in India comes from Mauritius, but IRDA is not comfortable with foreign investors using Mauritius structure for investing into India. So based on our experience, IRDA has been a very conservative regulator. So it would be interesting to see how IRDA interprets the definition of control when it comes to determining whether the insurance company or the intermediary is Indian owned or controlled. Let's take second situation. Foreign investor is already holding 26% in the Indian insurance company, and there are a lot of cases. If you look at the articles of association of all the existing insurance companies, there are a number of affirmative rights which are there, which also includes rights which are operational rights. Assume that foreign investor does not want to increase the shareholding in these insurance companies or intermediaries. In that situation, Do you think that these rights will be grandfathered, or they will need to cut down the right by entering into amendment agreements?
So I think that's
What's
a good point, Mitchell. But if you look at the way Indian insurance companies actually defined under the IRDA Act, and also the consequential obligations on an Indian insurance company, one would think that if all goes well, the rights that are currently existing under the existing structures could be grandfathered, but to a limited extent, because these obligations of an insurance company will consistently, be looked at at the time of renewal of a license, for instance. Secondly, if you want to increase your share capital for any reason whatsoever, and you require the approval of the IRDA, as we know, you can't really acquire more than 5% without the approval of the IRDA. At that point in time, the IRDA may actually question the issuance of shares. So, even if things are maintained status quo, although, and no further issuances are planned to foreign investors, even then, the possibility, especially at the time of renewal of a license, that the IRDA may suggest withdrawal of these rights is definitely there.
Okay. And the third situation is if you are increasing from 26 to 49%, we're able to approach FIPB and IRDA also, because any change of more than 5% requires IRDA approval. There, the risk is clearly high that,
Absolutely.
You know, one of the two regulators may question the affirmative rights that you have. So.
Absolutely, because, I mean, the condition that the FIPB would actually approve any further issuance of shares to a foreign resident would be that the Indian control and management of the insurance company remains with the Indian residents, and clearly there FIBB is likely.
Excuse me, this is the operator. Ma'am, your voice is dipping a bit at times, so if you could just take care of that would be great.
Sure.
Thank you.
So what would happen there is that FIBB would definitely look at the rights that were actually granted prior to determine whether or not post the approval the control and management would remain with the Indian residents. Also, another thing to be looked at is as to whether an incoming investor would actually be okay with the previous foreign investors having a plethora of rights and the new investor not really having, not being entitled to have a similar set of rights, whether or not the investment amount that the new acquirer is actually investing in is larger than the previous investor. So that's, again, something that may not work from a contractual perspective.
Okay, thanks, Simon. I think the next important question, which is bothering a lot of insurance intermediaries, is the fact that earlier some of the intermediaries were not covered under the 26% foreign investment limit. Like, just to take an example, corporate agents. They were not specifically mentioned under the FDI policy for the purpose of 26% foreign investment limit. But now, by virtue of the new foreign investment guidelines for insurance sector and intermediaries. All intermediaries licensed by IRD have been covered. So what happens in a situation, let's say, where a corporate agent is already 100% owned by a foreign investor, and now the policy says that the foreign investment cannot exceed 49%. Is there any guideline from IRDA to cut down the shareholding to 49%, or whatever has happened is grandfathered? Do you have any thoughts on that, Abhinav?
So this is interesting, Nishil, because, you know, earlier, although the FDI policy covered only four intermediaries, as we discussed earlier, there were other intermediaries which IRDA regulations themselves curtailed the foreign investment limits to. So, for example, web aggregators is an example where the regulation stated you cannot have more than 26.
Okay.
However, a corporate agent was another example, as you rightly mentioned. But corporate agent did not have this requirement of 26% foreign shareholding, this limit of 26%. So what happens and what is there in the market today also is that these corporate agents have more than 49% shareholding, in some cases even wholly owned subsidiaries, as you rightly mentioned. Now, this has been curtailed to 49%. Now, what happens in future is unclear. Do they have to curtail it? It's not been clarified at all. In the past, a similar circumstance has happened with the, in the case of web aggregators, where when the 2013 regulations came out, which repealed the 2011 guidelines, they had said that the limit is 26%, and the web aggregators were given a year to bring down the investment limits for an investment to 26%. However, this has not been the case right now for corporate agents. IRDA hasn't come out with guidelines as to how do they want the corporate agents to achieve it. Is it grandfathered? Is it not grandfathered? We don't have any clarity on that.
Mm-hmm.
We are hoping that IRDA would come out with something to clarify this. But till then, I think it's an open call as to what do we do.
Okay. Understood. So, Simon, next question, which again a lot of clients have been asking, is what happens to the existing joint venture agreements? So majority of these agreements had call put options embedded in the agreements. As and when the insurance limit will be hiked from 26% to 49%. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think we'll see a lot of call put options being exercised? Any regulatory challenges to exercise of call put options?
Yeah, so Nishal, fortunately for us, I think the regulator has now clarified that call put options are in fact permissible. But here it is a slightly reverse situation where it's not that the foreign investor is asking for a put vis-a-vis the Indian promoter, but quite the reverse. The foreign investor is asking to buy shares from the Indian resident, or the Indian promoter will cause the foreign investor to buy his shares, which is quite the reverse from the problem that we actually had, wherein foreign investors were looking to exit through the put option route. Now, if you look at the way the regulations are actually worded, it would suggest that the optionality clauses continue to survive, but the only restriction there is pricing and assured return. Again, the way the regulations are actually worded, it would appear that the assured return is on an exit by the foreign investor and not otherwise. Therefore, there are two things that could emanate. One is a call or put option exercisable. The answer to that would be yes. SEBI has grandfathered or has permitted such call put options even in securities laws. And secondly, the RBI has clarified that, you know, call put options are actually permissible.
Sorry to interrupt, Simon. So what you are saying is there is no issue if foreign investor purchases shares from an Indian JV partner, even though it's assured return, or vice versa, if Indian JV partner has a put option on foreign investor because the assured
Absolutely.
Price restriction was only applicable for a put option by foreign investor on Indian resident.
Absolutely. Okay. Of course, you will still have to comply with the RBI pricing guidelines,
sure.
But other than that, the assured return should not stop you.
Okay. And do you see any changes which will be required to be made to the current structures because of this new definition of control? Because especially because we know that a lot of these investments have been structured through holdco structures. And a lot of these foreign investors have extensive rights at holdco level. Do these rights make the holdco a foreign-owned or controlled company, by virtue of which the insurance company or the insurance intermediary also becomes, or its shareholding is considered as foreign shareholding?
So the control element has been sort of extended to both the insurance company as well as the Indian and the Indian holding company as well. Because what the law really says is that where shares are held by Indian resident corporate entities, that corporate entity must also be controlled by Indian residents or Indian corporate entities as well. Therefore, the level of, so there are two things that need to be maintained. One is that the holding company has to be owned and controlled by Indian residents. Second is, of course, the insurance company as well will have to be owned and controlled by Indian residents. So let's revisit the earlier structures. One is the direct investment through equity shares, which is 26%. I think we covered that. Affirmative rights, extensive affirmative rights may be questioned, especially when you're doing a new issuance, you're going to FIPP again, or at the time of a renewal. Second is in terms of the holding company investing into the Indian insurance company. Again, because the holding company will have to be owned and controlled by Indian residents, extensive affirmative rights at the holding company level may also lead to an inference that the holding company is actually controlled by a foreign investor, where, they will have to actually look at the rights again to ensure that the control and ownership, that is, less the holding company will have to be held, more than 50% will have to be held by Indian residents, as well as the control will have to be vested with Indian residents. Also, at the insurance company level, it's the same requirement. Now, the third structure where you had NCDs and you had, certain covenant-like obligations under the loan agreements under the NCD route, that may remain unchanged because the control element, is limited to control under for FDI requirements. So the NCD route may still, covenants which were under the NCD or lending documents may still be permissible, and we may not really have to change.
Sure. Thanks, Simon. I think we can take some questions now. One request to all the participants, please restrict your questions to foreign investment in the Indian insurance sector, since there are a number of changes which have come and we want to keep the Q&A session focused just on the foreign investment in insurance sector. If you have any other queries other than foreign investment in insurance sector, feel free to write to us. We'll be happy to respond to those queries.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. We have first question from the line of Hitesh Kumar from PwC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. My question is, like one of the speakers mentioned that, now ownership and as well as the control should remain in Indian hands. So will this apply to FDI limit up to 26% also, or in a situation when FDI goes beyond 26% and up to 49%?
No, so like we said, this will apply irrespective, because it's very clear both in the insurance laws as well as the FDI policy that that at all points in time, any insurance company has to be owned and controlled by
Indian
residents. So it will apply, even if you have 26% shareholding.
Or below that.
Or below that,
yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. It's a reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. We have follow-up question from the line of Hitesh Kumar from PwC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. One of the speakers mentioned that IRDA is expected to come out some clarifications or notifications regarding the other permissible instruments or investments as may be prescribed. So when this is expected, and on which or what could be the instruments which can be permitted by IRDA?
So I think what we mentioned was IRDA has the authority to come out with any other types of capital instruments with respect to insurance company and intermediaries. We are not sure when will they come out with this, and if at all they come out, it should be mostly preference shares. Again, as you know, for foreign investors, it will be only compulsorily convertible preference shares. For Indian investors, they may come up with even they may allow redeemable preference shares also. So,
right.
But there is no sight on when they are going to come out with the notification.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have next question from the line of Sumit Sarkar from United Healthcare. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is just an observation. Would you be able to email us a summary of your presentation?
Sure, we'll do that. If you can just send us your mail ID. I think
we have your email.
Yeah, we'll send it across to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nilesh Kambli from ICICI Lombard. Please go ahead.
Hi. In case of insurance companies which are promoted by banks, whether the current FII limits will be considered for the purpose of calculation of FDI?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Can you repeat your question, please?
So in case of those insurance companies which are promoted by banks, Indian bank, so the FII limits in case of banks, that will be considered for for the purpose of counting the FII limit in insurance companies?
So in cases of entities like banks which promote insurance companies, the FDI, the investment limits applicable to the bank will be the applicable foreign investment limit for the insurance company as well. So the answer to your question would be yes. It will be the bank's foreign investment limit which would be considered in this.
So just to clarify further, so the insurance company's limit of 49% also includes the FII limit of banks. Is that the understanding?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Just one caveat there that the revenue of the holdco, for example, in this case the bank that you mentioned, should be contributing to more than 50% of the revenue of the entity.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have next question from the line of Harshayib Jadda from Archer and Angel. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Actually, this is another observation. I just need to know if you'll send out the slides for your presentation to everyone. Hello?
Yes,
sure, we can do that.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Participants, if you have a question, please press star and one at this time. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. So there are no further questions from participants.
Okay. So thanks to all of you for joining this webinar. We hope you found this useful. In case you have any further queries, feel free to write to us. Once again, thanks for joining this and have a good day.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, with this, we conclude today's conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.